right. Contrary to what you've been led to believe in the pamphlet, this talk is not going to be in Polish. It's going to be in English, as in the original agenda. So the topic of this presentation is running an ACA.NET cluster on Service Fabric or pretty much anywhere else. So before we start, about me. My name is Maciej Misztal. This is my Twitter handle. I'm a senior .NET developer and a freelance consultant. I'm also a Microsoft specialist specializing in development for Microsoft Azure. Hang on. All right. So this is my typical technology stack and stuff that I usually do. So basically, I work with C#. I work with a lot of build automation stuff like SaltStack, Gulp, Cake. I also do some web development, but primarily that's backend development on my side. And here are some of the companies I've been associated with. Most notably, right now I'm hired for a contracting agency called 7N, and my current client is a Swiss software licensing company called SoftwareOne. In case you haven't heard, we're going to build an Azure Competence Center in Warsaw. We're looking for a couple of guys, so if anyone's interested, just come on over and we can have a chat about this. All right, so before we jump to the actual presentation, some special thanks are in order. So first of all, Tomasz Kopacz from Microsoft's Warsaw office. Second of all, perhaps I should tell what for. So basically a couple months ago, I had plenty of problems with Service Fabric and Tomasz kept offering me good advice on it. So if you've got any questions, you can always go to him and he'll do his best to help. Next up, that's Aaron Stenner. That's one of the core ACA.NET contributors. He is also a founder of a company called Petabridge. And also Bartek Sypetkowski from Poland. He's one of the core ACA contributors as well. All right, so round of applause for these guys. Come on, make some noise. All right. So before we begin, this is not going to be your typical Service Fabric talk, the ones that you're used to from Channel 9 or any presentations by Microsoft. This one's going to be a bit different. We're going to focus more on ACA than on Service Fabric. And when it comes to Service Fabric, we'll only focus on, pretty much the infrastructure. Okay, so starting off with Service Fabric. Who has been working with Azure since, let's say, 2011? All right, so you guys are familiar with the term Azure Cloud Services. This is what it used to look like. So basically in 2011, a developer would create an application, put the code and the configuration into a package, upload it to the cloud, and inside the cloud, you would have an isolated environment called the cloud service that would expose a single endpoint. And running in that environment, you'd have multiple instances of an entity called web roles or worker roles. And they also frequently use the Azure storage mechanisms to communicate with each other, like queues or perhaps the service bus. So this is not very cost effective because in this model, Microsoft lets you to run a single instance of a process by default in a given role instance. So when scaling comes into mind, that's going to hit your wallet. About a year ago, I started to hear about this platform, and when it finally appeared, you can provision it in the portal, and this is what you get. So you get an array of virtual machines that are load balanced, and the endpoint is exposed to the outside. Additionally, you also get free storage accounts that are associated with those virtual machines. One of them is used to store the virtual hard drives, the other one is used to store logs, and finally some diagnostics data for app insights. And the important thing to note here is that those things typically run on Windows Server. However, recently they've announced that Ubuntu 16.04 is supported as well. I think it's in preview right now, so if anyone's going to do some Linux-based development, Service Fabric is also an option. Okay, the cluster manifest. This is the most important piece of configuration of Service Fabric. Basically, that's an XML file that dictates the whole setup of the Service Fabric cluster. It contains the node definitions, their placement in your topology. And in order to find it, you basically open up the Microsoft Service Fabric Explorer. You select the root node in the tree on the left, and finally you go to the manifest on the right. So if you were to, let's say, reconfigure a cluster, you'd have to edit that XML and then upload it later. One important thing that this is used for, apart from node definitions, you can also define custom properties on those nodes. For instance, in this case, you have some custom properties, has SSD, perhaps some node color, and some property with some value. This is used to apply placement constraints on the services. So that way, you can say that your service can only go to a node that has an SSD drive and some property value is equal or greater to 4. And in case you haven't known, this is also possible with PowerShell. So this opens up opportunities for IT pros as well. Okay. The reason why I've mentioned this is because that way you can apply specific roles to your service fabric nodes. In this case, the nodes highlighted in orange are web nodes. So web applications would be only deployed to those two nodes and then would be accessible through the load balancer. Okay. One of the coolest examples I found on the web is this. So this is a concept for a globally available, highly available service fabric cluster consisting of three regions. So we have region 1, region 2, and region 3. They are interconnected by VPNs. And also in the right, you see that there's the traffic manager. So in case you have a disaster scenario, the traffic manager will basically route traffic to a region that's healthy. Okay. Okay, so what is Service Fabric to me? Service Fabric to me is primarily an awesome hosting platform to run microservice instances. And from my perspective, it's also similar to other hosting platforms such as, Docker Swarm, Tectonic, DCOS, Kubernetes maybe. So finally, we are getting a real runtime environment to run distributed applications. All right, so now a little bit about akka.net. Right, so akka.net is a port of a hugely popular actor model framework that was primarily developed on Java and Scala. And about 2 years ago, there was an initiative to port it to .NET. Two guys started working on it separately. Then they've joined forces, and so the project was born on GitHub. And, it's been gaining momentum ever since. I highly recommend looking up their GitHub site, talking to the community on Gitter. They're very helpful. So let's start with what are actors used for. So to me, an actor is a fundamental unit of concurrent processing that can be used for such things as multiplayer MMO games, dynamic pricing systems, monitoring and alerting systems, device tracking, IoT tracking, marketing and dynamic ad systems, analytics, and recommendation engines. There's some of the applications. Okay, so what is an akka.net actor? Basically, that's a container containing a mailbox, a behavior that can be changed, a state, a supervision strategy for its descendants, and the descendants, aka children. Additionally, communication is achieved through a transport layer, and messages are coming in from a remote actor reference. So the actor reference is an address of a different actor living in either the same or a remote actor system. And the important thing to note here is, as the actor theory dictates, that this actor processes only a single message at a time, thus giving you, ensuring that only a single message will be processed at a time, so you do not have to worry about concurrency, synchronization, nothing of that sort. Okay, hang on. Okay, so actors are cheap. In case of akka, you can fit about 2.5 mil actors in a single gigabyte of RAM. Additionally, if you go to their GitHub site, you can observe the benchmark results, which are also pretty interesting. Okay, before we proceed, we'll talk about a special type of an actor that's called a router. A router is a special type of actor because you don't get to interact with it much. You just send messages to it, and it routes them to a collection of actors that they are called routees. There are two fundamental types of routers. One of them is a pool router, and the other is a group router. So the difference is that in case of pool routers, ACCA dynamically creates the routees on the other end. You can use the configuration to dictate the minimum and maximum amount of routees. And in case of the group routers, you are the guys that are responsible for the lifetime of those routees and their placement in the actor system. There are multiple routing strategies. For instance, well, round robin, this is pretty self-explanatory. Each subsequent message will be routed to each subsequent routee in turn. Broadcast, so a single message will be broadcasted to all of them. Consistent hashing, that's an interesting one. Each message contains a property with a hash, and the router guarantees that those messages will always be delivered to the same routee. Tail chopping, this is another interesting one. So in this case, the router will randomly select the routee, and in case the routee is unavailable or fails to respond, it will randomly select another until a valid response is given. Scatter gather first completed, that one's similar to broadcast, but it will take the first answer and return it to the original sender. Smallest mailbox, like I mentioned before, actors have mailboxes, and in this case, the one with the least amount of messages in it will be selected. Okay, and finally, dynamically resizable pools. In case of pool routers, it is possible to attach a configuration property which is called a resizer. So that way, ACCA will indeed dynamically spawn additional routees as needed. Okay, the important thing to note about routers is also that they're your gateway to clustering. If we have a router that lives on a host in a single process which has a role in the cluster, its routee can live in the same process with the same role, or it can live on a totally different machine in totally different processes with different roles. So this is important because that way you get to delegate workloads to nodes that are running stateless services that do not hold any state. They are easily scalable, and you can do some massive processing with it. Okay, local actor systems. So here, the difference between ACCA and Service Fabric is that Service Fabric does not have a structure to its actor system. In case of ACCA, it's a tree-like structure. And the three topmost actors are called the guardians. They are system actors. You do not have any access to them. System-level activities that ACCA performs is basically performed in the descendants of the system actor. And any actors that you create as a programmer are the descendants of the user actor. So the first generation of children of the user actor are called top-level actors. And if we were to come up with an address of an actor in the actor system, we can do it like this. So the first segment is the protocol. In this case, it's ACCA TCP. Next up, it's the name of the actor system, because actor systems are named. And in case of clustering, it's important to know that all the actor systems participating in the cluster need to have the same name. Next up, it's the host name, or fully qualified the name, domain name, or an IP address, a port. And then /user /A1/B1, and that's the address of the actor that's later contained in the actor reference. And funny thing about the actor reference is that it's serializable. So unlike in Service Fabric, you can basically serialize the actor reference, pass it along in the message, and it can be consumed in a remote actor system. Okay, fault tolerance. One of the reasons why the structure looks like this is because ACCA provides us with a way to handle failures. It is a very popular pattern to delegate unsafe IO-related work to leaf nodes in the tree. So. Also, do you guys remember when we talked about the actor, there's this supervision strategy. So we can have multiple supervision strategies for multiple types of potential failures. In this case, something happens. And the supervision strategy for this type of an error says that this node needs to be restarted. There we go. But a bit later, something else can happen, a different kind of failure with a different supervision strategy. And this supervision strategy may differ and may cause ACCA to restart the entire hierarchy that contained the original failure. So this is the way that ACCA provides fault tolerance to us. Okay, so now we're going to dive into a bit of a comparison between service fabric actors and ACCA.NET. So the first difference is in the way that they're hosted. In case of service fabric, the actors are only usable in actor services. In case of ACCA.NET, you can host them, well, pretty much everywhere. So it's console, Windows services, ASP.NET, and ASP.NET Core running full .NET framework. .NET Core support is coming in the next major version of ACCA 1.5. Mono is supported, and recently the entire test suite for ACCA cluster started to, well, pass the tests under Mono. So the guys have been investigating running it inside Docker on Linux, and they've been successful. There are also examples available of running ACCA.NET inside front-end applications such as WPF and WinForms. Check out the ACCA bootcamp for that. Some of the guys were successful in starting actor systems in Xamarin-based applications, and recently I've started it in Service Fabric stateless services. The concurrency model. In case of the Service Fabric, there is an actor-level lock that is obtained for the duration of a method call. So if we were to call a public method on that actor, no other thread will be able to enter. However, the thread that's doing the work can re-enter that method. You can also restrict this behavior with an attribute, if I remember right. In case of ACCA.NET, like we've mentioned before, there's a mailbox with a queue of messages, and the actor is guaranteed to process a single message at a time. Okay, distribution and lifetime. Service Fabric will do its best to provide a uniform distribution across all nodes, but you don't have any control over it, so it's the runtime that will select on which node the actor will be deployed. And Service Fabric has complete control over the lifetime. This is typical Microsoft's approach, where they do most of the hard thinking for you and give you the product. Look how easy it is to use. In case of ACCA, you're responsible for what you're doing. So actors are created in local or remote actor systems. You have complete control over their location in the actor system tree. Basically, if you select a name and create an actor inside a parent, then effectively a tree node is formed. And you have the control over the lifetime. There are multiple ways to stop an actor. So you can use a context stop method, or you can pass a special system message that's called a poison pill. Okay, so state persistence. How many of you are familiar with event sourcing? All right, so for those that do not know, so this is basically a stream of events comes into an actor, the actor processes them, its state changes, and those events are also persisted to some durable store. The actor is killed, later is restarted for some reason, and it does a replay on that stream of events to restore its last state. So Service Fabric has three modes. First of all, it's disabled. Second one is in memory. The events are replicated across the entire cluster, and I think there are periodic writes to the hard drive. And finally, the state is persisted to the hard drive. In case of ACCA.NET, we have multiple NuGet packages that serve that purpose. So the core library for that is ACCA Persistence, providing us with the in-memory store. And there are plugins for the most popular SQL databases for Redis, MongoDB, Cassandra. And a couple days ago, one of the guys has added a plugin to Azure Tables. So plenty of options. Message serialization. Service Fabric is using the good old data contract serializer, which is Microsoft's standard way of serializing messages and POCOs. ACCA.NET started out with JSON.NET, but it proved to be inadequate when dealing with more complex messages. Also, there are some issues with its performance. So recently, Roger Johansson, one of ACCA's core contributors, has created a custom serializer called Wire. And apparently it wires so good that the guys from Orleans took interest in it and want to replace their serializer with this. So that's open source contributing to Microsoft in this case. Security. In case of Service Fabric, when dealing with the cluster manifest, you can enable encryption for the cluster. That involves uploading some certificates to the certificate store, and you have encrypted traffic between the nodes. In case of ACCA, this is not yet supported. TLS support is coming in version 1.5. If you were to have some secure communications, you need to implement your own mechanism right now. Learning resources. So I was really trying hard to find some good resources on Service Fabric. Right now, all there is the official documentation in MSDN. Plus, in case of ACCA, there's a page called getacca.net. It contains the documentation. It's not perfect, but the good thing is, since this is a port of an existing framework, you can always fall back to the original framework in Java. The documentation is pretty much the same. Samples on GitHub are available. There's a bootcamp by PrepareBridge for the ones who want to start learning ACCA and have some fun with it. And there's the community on Gitter. They're very active and very helpful, like I've mentioned. There's official training by Aaron's company called PrepareBridge. It consists of three courses, ACCA.NET design patterns, remoting, and clustering. So if anyone wants to give it a try, I highly recommend it. Aaron's a great teacher and a good speaker. And there are like six courses on Pluralsight, five of them by Jason Brown and the sixth one about clustering by some other author. I don't remember the name, unfortunately. Okay, are there any books? Yeah, there are. I happen to have a copy of Programming Microsoft Azure Service Fabric. If you want to see it, I can pass it around so you can check out the contents. There's a book in the making on ACCA. By Anthony Brown, but it was supposed to be released in the summer, but the guy seems to be unable to finish it right now. Okay, ACCA cluster. So, this is what we've all been waiting for. The first thing to know about the cluster is that nodes in the cluster do not have to be the same. There's going to be different processes with different purposes. It's a heterogeneous cluster. So first up, let's start with Lighthouse. So PrepareBridge has created a microservice that does one thing and does it well. And that thing is accepting new cluster members into the cluster. It's called Lighthouse. It's available under the address that's given in the bottom. So when configuring Lighthouse, we need to focus on two areas. Okay, it's not perfect, but it will have to do. So what you're seeing here is called HOCON. That's Human Optimized Configuration Object Notation. Basically, it's a superset of JSON. It's very, very similar. So in order to configure Lighthouse, you need to configure the ACCA remote section first. So in this case, this needs to be the port and the host name, and in case you're running a scenario like an Azure virtual machine within a private network with a private and a public address, you can also fill out the public host name. So if you were to put an ACCA remote node in listen mode, this is what you'd have to do. If you would have an ACCA remote node that's connecting to somewhere, you can set the port to zero and the operating system will randomly assign a port to you. But you don't have to do that. Okay, next up, it's the ACCA cluster configuration. There are three things that we need to focus on here. In case of Service Fabric, there's the third thing, as it turned out recently. So first of all, you need to provide a node with a list of known seed nodes. Next, you can optionally assign a role to it. So in case of Lighthouse, that role is obviously Lighthouse. And in case of Service Fabric, we've had to add the setting to auto down unreachable nodes after, let's say, 30 seconds. And the reason is that if you do an upgrade on your cluster and replace your service instances with new ones, ACCA doesn't know that the old ones are already gone, and it's still trying to reconnect to them. So that way, we tell Lighthouse to get rid of those services which have been inactive for the past 30 seconds. Support is coming to change that by creating a downlink provider, but that's a story for coming months, I suppose. Okay. That's the important thing to remember from this slide. Cluster seed nodes require to have well-known IP addresses. Okay. So how does the cluster form? Assume we have three nodes. Node A is the seed node. B and C pretty much join at the same time. And they start to exchange messages called gossip messages. Those gossip messages are basically cluster availability and status messages, but there are also some performance-related messages. So both nodes join, and eventually, at some point in time, node A informs node B, hey, there's a C node around. You should talk to it. And the same message is sent to node C. And eventually, the two nodes connect, and a ring communication is established between every node in the cluster. A cluster leader is elected, and the cluster is formed. There's something to watch out for. This is an example from the documentation that purposefully contains an error. Does anybody see a potential issue or two with this? Okay, so we have two seed nodes with well-known IP addresses. We have three non-seed nodes that are attempting to join the cluster. So what will happen if node B goes down? Well, obviously, node E doesn't know about node A, so it wouldn't be able to join. That's one thing. The other thing is that in case there's a network partition between nodes A and B, there's a risk that two individual clusters would be formed. So that's a split brain situation, and we don't want that to happen. So in order to do that right, every node that's joining the cluster should contain a full list of known seed nodes. Okay, now we'll talk about how does, joining the cluster work. So a node is joining the cluster, and has the list of the seed nodes joining, and the leader waits for it to become aware of every other node in the cluster. So when it's connected to every other node, the leader takes action and sets the node to a state called up. And this is the nominal state of the node. This is where we do most of the work. At some point, we may decide that it's time to leave the cluster. The service is shutting down, or maybe there's an deployment inbound. So the node issues a leave command and puts itself in a leaving state. And once the leader detects that, it puts the node in an exiting state. And this is the time to finish all communication with that node and conclude any work that was being executed. After that happens, the leader removes the node from the cluster. You're probably wondering what's in the middle. So at any time, we can expect a network failure to happen. And once that happens, a failure detector goes off and puts the node in an unreachable state. Those things are usually very temporary. So the idea is that you can transition from any state to an unreachable state, and then you can transition back. All right, so now it's time for the demo. Let me check my clock. Yeah, we're on track pretty much as expected. So first, I will demonstrate how does the deployment work in case of ACA, what needs to be done to port Lighthouse to an Azure Service Fabric stateless service. Okay, I'll need to have a sit, do some minor tweaks to my setup. Fix the display. Przepraszam, potrzebuję chyba drobnej pomocy, albo już nie. All right, it should come back in a small while. All right, so the important thing to know is that if you have a stateless service that you want to put in a listen mode, when it starts, it uses this property to obtain a list of service instance listeners. So the... Tak, jasne. Hang on. Anybert? All right. So if you were to use an ASP.NET application, you could probably have an Owen listener in here. So in order to be successful with this, I had to put the entire Lighthouse inside an Akka cluster communication listener. So what happens inside is Akka takes the endpoint settings from service fabric settings, which are found in the package route in the service manifest. Here it is. So this stateless service listens on port 50,001. Protocol used is TCP. All right. So what happens here? We create the object and finally this. So we obtain the endpoint. We configure the seed nodes using Akka configuration that's found in the app config file using the endpoint from the setup I've just shown you. We configure at the Akka remote section using the configure Helios extension method. And finally, we create the final configuration of Akka using something that's called a fallback mechanism. Finally, we create the actor system and return a string containing the address of that node. So let's see how does this work. So okay, my local cluster is active. So I'm setting this as the startup project. Let's let it start. In the meanwhile, I'm using a logging centralization solution called SEQ. It's actually pretty useful when you're starting to work on distributed stuff because obviously you don't want to read 10,000 log files. Okay, let's see what's the status of my cluster. Nothing in there yet. The important thing to remember is that service fabric projects are 64-bit projects, so this makes things a little bit more complicated. Okay, in the meanwhile, let's start our other Lighthouse instance. Okay, the first node is up. That's the console instance. And the second node is up as well. They have formed the cluster between each other. So let's examine the cluster explorer. So here's my application. Here's my seed service. This is the partition name. It's been deployed to node 2. And this is my address. Looks familiar? Okay. So we have demonstrated that the cluster has been formed. Let's examine the logs real quick. Yep. Two nodes are up. Okay, let's go back to our presentation. All right. So we'll now discuss the whole demo solution that I've prepared for this talk. So at the time when I was starting to work on this, I found a fragment in the book I've passed which says this. At the time of this writing, Service Fabric is introducing a new gateway service that provides service discovery and load balancing for browser clients, not covered in the book because nobody knows how it should work yet. So actually, this made me think that leaves plenty of room for me. So why don't I show you what I made? So What you guys have seen already was the seed service started inside the cluster and outside of the cluster as the console instance. Additionally, the solution contains an application called Hive Cluster that contains an API gateway service and a service discovery service. So the service discovery has five instances, and the API gateway only has a single instance because, well, for local purposes, I was unable to make multiple API gateways listen on the same port in the way that I'd like. So for the purpose of this presentation, the API gateway is a single point of failure. Additionally, there's a Hive cluster test application that contains a single test API service. That's basically, that's your starter web API app. So it contains that good old values controller that returns some XML. But the trick is that the way the solution works is that when I start the Hive cluster test application, those services register themselves with service discovery and then become available to the API gateways. So if I have a single endpoint exposed to the outside world, it is possible to route traffic from the outside to a service instance that's running inside your cluster. So how does this work? So the test API instances start, and please note that these state names are not cluster member states. Those are the names of states of the actors in this case. So the actors of the test API services are joining. Once they're up, so once the actor system becomes a member of the cluster, they change their state to initializing. They send a message to the service discovery actors that a service instance has been started using routers, as was discussed before. Once that happens, service discovery sends an acknowledgement, and the test API services basically become ready. In case of an unreachability event, the actors become unreachable, and when they become reachable again, they should undergo the initialization process again to notify service discovery that, hey, we're back, we're good to go. Okay, next is the service discovery. This one's similar, but there's a difference. So once they're up, they become initializing, but one of the nodes, which is a role leader, becomes immediately ready. And we'll discuss why in a couple of seconds. Okay, so the other nodes ask that node to let them know if there are any services that they should initialize with. If there are, they receive the set services message and they become ready as well. So if there's some service that wants to register itself, it expects at least a single service discovery node to be active to be, well, ready to receive information that a service is basically waiting to join that cluster. So service instance started, message is sent. And the leader persists the state, and then it sends a message to all its siblings that they should update their state as well. Okay, so once that happens, a notification is sent to all the API gateway instances. In case there's an unreachability event, so if a service discovery node becomes unreachable, then it's put in the unreachable state. If a different node is unreachable, and for instance, that's some service node, it will be removed from the routing table, and the API gateways will be notified about this as well. Okay, so once the node becomes reachable again, it undergoes its initialization process. Next up, the API gateway. So we're using our good old pattern here. So we're initializing, we're asking service discovery whether or not there are any services that the API gateway needs to route traffic. Service discovery responds with a collection of services that the API gateway can immediately put in its routing table, and they become ready. So side by side, additional services that start are routed to the API gateway, so it basically is kept up to date at all times. Side by side with this, we have an ASP.NET application that has an OAuth pipeline inside. So whenever an HTTP call is made, there is a piece of middleware that makes a request to the local actor system to try to obtain a location of the service inside the cluster. That's pretty much it. And unreachability is handled as usual. Okay, the Owen pipeline. I take it you guys have heard of it. Does everybody know what Owen is? Most of you. So a while ago, there was an initiative at Microsoft to try to separate ASP.NET from its hosting platform, which is IIS. And they've been successful. An open web interface for .NET was created, and suddenly it became possible to host ASP.NET applications inside console apps and in different places. So for the purpose of this presentation, what we have here is the following pipeline. First of all, we have a performance telemetry middleware. We measure the time of every request. Error logging middleware, any unhandled exceptions or HTTP error codes are logged. Service discovery middleware, which talks to the local API gateway actor system. And finally, the service executor middleware, which makes the call to the actual service. And then the result is returned. All right. So, ready for the full solution? Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to start the Hive cluster application. And also I'm going to start the test services application containing the actual services. Let's have a look at our cluster. We have two additional application types. This one's still deploying. And here we have two service types. Service discovery has been deployed to nodes 0 through 4, and API gateway has been deployed to a single node. Okay, let's refresh and see if the test services are ready. Okay, nothing to worry about here. Yeah, we have five nodes with the test API service. Okay, so let's have a look at the logs. So, okay, let me have a quick look. This is actually a pretty cool solution because you get to persist messages with some serialized data, and it's called structured logging. The library I use is called Serilog. It's pretty awesome. So, for instance, over here, we have a service that's listening on this address. So it has the web API here it is. So the values controller is basically returning some XML. But this is the service instance ID that's assigned by Service Fabric. I used it to have multiple instances of this application listening on the same port. Okay, so the API gateway is listening on port 9008. And the name of the service is Test API, so I would expect that if I ask the Test API service for the values controller, then I would get the same result. So, we have a working API gateway. Okay, I think that's it. So, if there are any questions, I'll be happy to take them now. Let's check the time. Almost an hour. Yeah, go ahead.
What is one of your VARs that have been working for this conference that we know about, right? Akka, you already asked. Mm-hmm. The reporting that you almost zależało during the bardziej pasowo, ale teraz jak już od kilku miesięcy jest ogólnie dostępny Service Fabric, widać, że Microsoft tak naprawdę wybrał Ornitz jako.
Znaczy bardzo, bardzo podobny model do
Ornitz.
Właściwie
identyczne. Jeżeli czyta się dokumentację Ornitz, to jest tak naprawdę...
Jeden to jeden. praktycznie to samo, tak.
Teraz pytanie, skąd masz to przekonanie, że powinniśmy inwestować czas w technologię, biorąc pod uwagę, że w przeszłości były projekty, które były znacznie lepsze niż projekty sponsorowane przez Microsoft i te projekty przegrały. Na przykład ten Hibernate już...
Albo Actor FX, inny framework aktorowy z Microsoftu. No dobra, tak jak wspomniałem, Service Fabric jest takim rozwiązaniem typowo Microsoftowym, gdzie Microsoft pomyślał za ciebie, nie? Więc wszystko jest ładnie i pięknie, dopóki nie wydarzy się jakiś use case, że Microsoft tego nie przewidział. Wtedy zazwyczaj wszystko bierze w łeb. Też, ale w tym przypadku mi osobiście podoba się to, że masz nad wszystkim tak naprawdę kontrolę. Więc ja jestem zwolennikiem tego typu właśnie rozwiązań. Any other questions? All right, I guess that's it then. Thanks.